Listen, America. This father lives in Haddon Township, New Jersey. Might he be a neighbor of yours?
I think that it's about time that we got education facilities in the county, in the state, and throughout the whole United States that can be used by all the children. I have three boys of my own, 10, 8, and 7, and I know what I'm talking about.
Living 1951, in cooperation with the 20th Century Fund, presents transcribed The People Act. True stories of how your fellow Americans are uniting now in democratic ways to solve some of their everyday problems. These stories are assembled and produced by NBC's special program unit, Living 1951. Today's program, As the Children Go. Your narrator, Ben Grauer.
Greetings, America. Maybe you live in such a place as the bustling township of Haddon, Camden County, New Jersey. Once a single community, self-contained, today Haddon is a hodgepodge of six disjointed sections. But though divided six ways, when it came to doing something important, Haddon proved itself truly united. For comment on this, we turn to our field reporter who was there, Elmore McKee.
Ben Grauer is right, ladies and gentlemen. When it comes to meeting a basic problem that confronts so many communities throughout the nation today, namely crowded schools, divided Haddon Township welded itself into a united, powerful, constructive force. We recorded the story, some of it, at the very moment it was happening, so that you may hear the forces of freedom and democracy as they swing into action. Literally as it happened, I return you to Ben Grauer.
Back in 49, Haddon Township, counting its crop of war babies, found that many had come of school age, and their parents could already see the handwriting on the blackboard. Talking with the citizens of Haddon recently, we asked them to recall for you in their own recorded words the situation as it was then. For example, Marion Turner.
We had had no new school facilities here in the community for 20 years, and the community was growing by leaps and bounds.
Joyce Casperin put it like this.
As a former school teacher, I realized that no teacher with 40 pupils could give the time and the attention that growing children need in such a situation.
The Reverend Mr. Texas also knew the situation firsthand.
Well, I had an opportunity to substitute teaching. The morning I arrived, I won't forget it, they sent me down into the auditorium, and there it was supposed to be a classroom. The boys and girls all jammed in back of the regular auditorium seats. That condition prevailed throughout the entire day, boys and girls rushing here and rushing there and crowding in here and crowding in there. Total confusion.
Total confusion. Those two words well reflect Haddon's overcrowded, understaffed schools 2 years ago. And with more children, hence more confusion, on the way. To meet this need, the Board of Education proposed a six-room addition in the fastest-growing section. And, in the words of Board Member Franklin Jackson III,
we put this matter up to a vote before the people.
But Haddon, not yet sure of itself, went to the polls to vote on this school addition, divided in sentiment as well as geography. Result, defeat. Thanks in no small part to the opposition of the Taxpayers Association. As its secretary, Hugo Klein, put it to us,
we felt that the taxpayer was not getting his dollar's worth.
So did Haddon's first effort to meet his problem come to grief. And how did the Board of Education take this repudiation at the polls?
We at the Board of Education were discouraged and disgusted with the situation. And we felt if the people wanted this addition to a school or a new school, that they would come to us before we would do anything further.
So the school board, smarting under defeat, sat back, frustrated by what they took to be, at best, public indifference to the problem of schools. You see, they were yet to hear from a couple of young housewives in town, housewives whose minds could be as busy as their hands as they went about their age-old tasks.
Mrs. Space and I have found that we get our best ideas while we're ironing.
Putting down that iron, Stella Shavitz, ex-school teacher, mother of two, went to the telephone and called the county superintendent of schools directly. Introduced herself. Asked, as a troubled mother, what's left for the people to do now? Back came the answer. Nothing. Till things get bad enough for the state to intervene, unless you get together with other representative citizens and form an organization that will do something about it. Dark-haired Stella Shavitz, as the saying goes, is no slouch. Neither is attractive Frances Spaeth, who recently confessed to us,
I don't think we'll ever go back to being just normal housewives again.
Together, these two mothers, heretofore primarily concerned with home and family, started phoning people. People they would move to action. A PTA president. The head of the civic association. Important local citizens, average local citizens. Mothers, fathers, businessmen, strangers, friends. Call them to a meeting at Mrs. Shavitz's house to talk over, as have Americans from time immemorial, their common problem. Mrs. Ellis, president of the Bittlewood PTA, remembers that first meeting.
We talked and discussed and argued on into the night to adapt the school system.
The people talking it over. And when late in the night they were through talking,
we finally decided to organize into a citizens' education committee to get the facts of the school and the system out to the people who were interested and also to those who seem uninterested.
As a result of the birth of the Citizens Education Committee, something happened in Haddon Township that had never happened before. Down upon the next meeting of the Board of Education, whose public meetings in the past, owing to the people's indifference, had been held in virtual privacy, down upon this education meeting descended a determined body of citizens. Upon a board, remember, that felt,
we were disgusted and discouraged, and we felt that we weren't going to do anything further unless the people themselves showed more interest.
Well, so much interest did the people show that eventful night that they ultimately wrung from the board, by way of education authorities in Trenton, an official recommendation to answer Haddon's problem, a 20-room school to be built on not less than 20 acres. Twenty rooms on 20 acres. Now, there was a goal to aim for. The board promised to investigate available land. The people went home. But summer went by, no report. September came and school opened, more crowded than ever, and there was still no report. It was obvious that unless the public acted and with full support, nothing would be done. Promptly, the Citizens Committee struck out, seeking to interest clubs like the Lions and individuals like the man whose voice you hear next, Colin Barnett.
I got involved with a rather unusual way. My wife has been to a PTA meeting. She came home one night and she was stewing about the inadequate facilities and the fact that our boy was shuffled from classroom to classroom. He didn't know which homeroom he was going to go to in the morning. He'd been changed four or five times.
With his wife's complaints, Barnett was not at first impressed.
Man-like, of course, I didn't worry too much about what she said. The boy went off to school in the morning. He came home in the afternoon. And it wasn't for perhaps two or three weeks of talk that I finally realized that something was wrong. And even then, of course, I didn't do anything.
But then Mrs. Shavitz, the housewife who finds the ironing board such an inspiration, Mrs. Shavitz got busy.
It was a phone call one evening asking me to come to a Board of Education meeting that initiated me into the workings of our particular Board of Education.
Aroused by what he saw and heard at this first meeting he attended, Colin Barnett took it upon himself to secure architectural sketches and cost analyses for the proposed new school, material the board thought unobtainable without considerable expense. Faced with this evidence of what citizen action can do, the board recommended
that the Citizens Committee on Education appoint a committee to be known as the Advisory Committee to work with us, the Board of Education, on this problem.
Here was action that meant something. A citizens' advisory committee appointed at the suggestion of the board to help move the public to the need of a 20-acre tract for the new school. Doubtful Hugo Klein of the Taxpayers Association, appointed to the board, first had to convince himself.
I wrote to the National Citizens Commission for the Public Schools, and I was surprised to find that 40 acres were recommended.
In the face of this expert opinion, their 20-acre project seemed modest. So, won over to the need, and placated by the removal of frills, the Taxpayers Association withdrew its opposition to the purchase of the recommended land because, as Hugo Klein later confessed to us,
any taxpayer can see sense in obtaining 20 acres of centrally located land for $6,700.
In other ways, too, the National Citizens Commission for the Public Schools are helpful with suggestions and advice. That December, the Board of Education called for an election to vote upon the transfer of funds to purchase the required land for the new school. It was Christmas week, and in the words of Marion Turner,
Christmas week is an awful time to hold an election for anything.
Nevertheless, sparked by ever-present Mrs. Shavitz and Mrs. Spaeth, the members of the Citizens Committee set out to compete with Santa Claus. Colin Barnett, who once wouldn't listen to his wife, now sought people to listen to him.
I was a member of that speaker's bureau night after night. I went out and spoke before various clubs.
While Barnett did that, Mrs. Caskey delivered brochures.
I would ring the doorbell, and when the individual came to the door, I would ask them to please come out and vote.
George Oldak, who with Barnett was later elected to the board through the committee's efforts, took to radio and television.
I was able to point out that the building of the new school would not result in any greater increase in tax rate than if we did not build the new school.
Mrs. Ellis had to go campaigning even on Christmas Day.
That Christmas Day, I would say around 3 in the afternoon, we were watching the children play with their toys when the phone rang, and I was asked if I would get these folders distributed.
Her answer? Well, she took the whole family out to help her do it.
By the time we were through, it was quite dark. We were quite ready for a Merry Christmas and a silent night.
Frances Spaeth and Stella Shavitz, working perhaps hardest of all, were forced to leave the care and feeding of their children entirely to their husbands. We asked them how their husbands took it. Frances Spaeth speaking.
I may sound like a Pollyanna, but I don't remember any griping. I only remember that my husband never wanted me to give it up.
And Stella Shavitz?
The attitude of my husband was just wonderful. He was cooperative in every way. He never knew when he was going to get his meals, and he never could get to use the telephone when he wanted it, because we were on it all the time. But still, he wasn't mad about it at all.
Fortunate, then, was the patience of these two husbands, unsung heroes in the saga of Haddon Township. But who knows? Perhaps what really turned the tide was the women's secret weapon.
I spent a good bit of time official babysitting until the mothers and fathers got back from the polls. While I was out babysitting with other children, Daddy stayed home and babysitted with our two children.
No one knows how many votes the babysitting business accounted for, but this much we do know. When all the votes were counted, the people of Haddon Township had declared themselves overwhelmingly for the purchase of land for their new school. The land authorized. Next came the matter of voting funds to build the school. And that's almost a story in itself. For after weeks of preparing a vital booklet full of convincing facts and figures stating the case for the school, at the 11th hour, it suddenly appeared that they wouldn't meet the deadline. Their pamphlet wouldn't leave the presses in time for distribution before the vote. They gathered that night in Mrs. Spaeth's house to get that pamphlet proofed and printed, recalls Colin Barnett.
That night was one of the most hectic nights I ever spent. Here we were, a group of amateurs trying to do a professional job and having only 24 hours in which to do it. We sat at the table and, frankly, I think at first we were all flabbergasted. We didn't know how to start.
And there, too, working alongside Barnett and typing lists of endorsers of the school program, was Hugo Klein.
I'll never forget that night. Mrs. Bates served sandwiches and coffee, and I never got home until 2 o'clock in the morning.
Neighbors who were ad men and artists were called into the fray to help out. And as George Oldack remembers the end...
It wound up with a rather hilarious note when one of the last sentences on the financial page rambled on ad infinitum until no one could make sense of what it really meant, and yet the facts were there.
But when they were done, all the facts were there. And when the people read them, they voted 8-1 in favor of the new school. But even then, one last obstacle remained. Every American knows only too well what has happened in recent months to the dollar. And soaring prices made no exception of construction costs. Now, suddenly, the money they had voted fell short of the need. They needed thousands of dollars more. Would the voters go for it? Well, they don't call the women of Haddon the women with nine lives for nothing. They went back into action. And this time when voting time rolled round, our field reporter was there. The next voices you hear will be the actual voices of the voters recorded in New Jersey as they came to the polls for the final and deciding vote.
Our little boy can only go in the afternoons, and in the morning he plays all day. In the afternoons he's practically sleeping all afternoon when he gets in school.
I think that it's about time that we got education facilities in the county, in the state, and throughout the whole United States that can be used by all the children. I have 3 boys of my own, 10, 8, and 7, and I know what I'm talking about.
The children in Edison School are in the basement. Down in the basement, it should have a decent place for them to go to school.
The teacher has at least 38 or 39 pupils in the room. The children just aren't getting what they should. I have watched the 6th grade in the school right across the street from me being moved from one school to another, and the children not knowing where they're going or where the students they're going to be with from one year to the next.
Stella Shavitz was there, you can be sure of that. And so was Frances Spaeth. And you can be sure, too, no one in the room listened more carefully when Clyde Jennings later took the floor to announce...
Meeting will come to order. As president of the Haddon Township Board of Education, I would like to announce the results of today's election. A total of 823 yes to 54 no.
Thus was the school won. And not so long ago, we returned to Haddon, America, to record the climax to this story. There in an open field that cold and blustery day, parents and children gathered to witness at long last the groundbreaking for the school they'd fought so hard for. We placed our microphone before the Reverend Mr. Taxis, who once served as a substitute teacher in a class that met in an auditorium, remember? As he bowed his head to give the invocation.
We thank thee that thou dost speak to the hearts and the minds of men and women, stirring them with a spirit...
We placed our microphone, too, before President of the Board of Education, Jennings, as he dug the first spadeful of dirt.
I don't think I would be more happy if I were breaking ground for my own home.
And finally, we held our microphone high to catch the voices of the children. The children who sang the song that symbolizes for all of us the spirit of democracy. Democracy that made possible in Haddon all that had gone before. And now, let's again hear from field reporter Elmore McKee.
3 times I went to Haddon Township, and 3 times I came away realizing how great is the power of a free people once they are aroused to accept their responsibilities. On our final visit with Mrs. Shavitz and Mrs. Spaeth, the 2 delightful women credited by their fellow citizens with inspiring this whole accomplishment, they said some things which seemed to sum up the whole story. This is Mrs. Shavitz.
The campaign for the new school has taught the people of this town the art of working together And that, it seems to me, is the art of democracy.
But perhaps the most meaningful of all are these words from one of the beneficiaries of our story, one of the children of Haddon Township, happy and breathless Dale Emery.
We thank all of you who have understood our need and made it possible for this new school to be built.
Surely that same spirit, that same faith in the democratic process expressed by these good women of Haddon Township can help other communities throughout our nation to deal with their school problems. For comment on some of these national implications of our story today, we call upon a representative of the 20th Century Fund, the research foundation which is collaborating with NBC in producing these programs. He is Mr. Thomas R. Koskaden, chief of the Education Department of the 20th Century Fund. Mr. Koskaden, have any of the fund studies dealt with our school system here in America?
Well, indeed they have, Mr. Grauer, and they show us many things to be proud of. Now, for example, our comprehensive survey called America's Needs and Resources, which was done by our fund economist, Dr. J. Frederick Dewhurst and his associates, found that here in the United States, we have more students in secondary schools, that's high schools, of course,
right,
than all the rest of the world put together.
Well, that is a striking fact. I imagine it'll come as no particular surprise to the people of Haddon Township.
You mean because their schools were so crowded?
Exactly.
Well, I know how they feel. And as a matter of fact, practically every community in the United States is faced with that very same problem.
Well, does that mean that a larger percentage of our children are in school nowadays than, say, 10 years ago?
Well, no, not necessarily. Because our fund figures show that even before the war, out of all children in the age group 7 to 14, about 9 out of 10 were in school.
Well, then, where are all these new pupils coming from?
From the new crop of babies. Our population figures show that both marriages and births declined during the Depression years of the 1930s. Then, as we all know, the war caused a big boom in marriages. Both the marriage rate and the birth rate went high, especially just after the war ended, and they've stayed high.
Mm-hmm.
And it's that big increase that the schools are feeling today.
Yes, and still, those children are a national asset.
Well, very literally so. And one thing worth emphasizing about this Haddon story is that it shows the vast reservoir of public goodwill toward children and toward the schools that just seems waiting to be tapped if someone, such as that citizens' committee there in Haddon Township, will go about it in some organized way.
Well, do you think it's mostly a matter of informing the public on what are the school needs?
Yes, I do. People of any community are always willing to help once they understand what the school needs are.
And what are, precisely, some of those needs?
Well, it happens that my work as head of the Education Department of the 20th Century Fund, making available our research findings in economics and our educational materials, brings me into rather constant contact with schools. And I think I know something of their problems.
Good.
Practically all our public schools, everywhere, are faced with a building problem. How to provide proper facilities for a much bigger enrollment than anyone expected. And also, schools have difficulty in getting an adequate supply of properly qualified teachers and in finding means of paying teachers and administrators the kind of salaries they deserve and should have in view of the importance of their work and their long years of professional training for it. And also, a national problem is to find means of providing more nearly equal educational opportunities for all children in all parts of the country.
And as you say, Mr. Koskaden, the surest means of helping schools to solve some of these problems you've indicated and others is to rally public support, especially in the home communities, right there where the schools are located.
Yes. And that's why the work of an organization such as the National Citizens Commission for the Public Schools is so important and so effective in encouraging communities all over the country to back up their schools. As Mr. Henry Toy, Jr., the executive head of that organization, told us,
as far as we're concerned, as a national organization, we're not the least bit interested in making any one community better than the other. We want the whole United States to be better. And so we feel that maybe there's a job that we will have to do, and that is to study this whole question of teacher education. How are our teachers educated? Is there any reason why there are not enough teachers or not enough young people training to become teachers? Are the institutions doing the job they should do? Are they being supported well enough? How are the teachers being taught? If we can supply some help, surely it will be a benefit to all of you on the local level.
Now, there's a real crusading spirit. And I suppose our country as a whole has ample financial means to improve its schools if it gets right down to it.
Yes, yes, it has. You know, even today, too many of our children fail to complete grade school and go on to high school. And I think that everyone would agree that a child should have an opportunity to get as much education as he's intellectually capable of absorbing. And our fund study of America's needs and resources indicates that it's well within our means as a nation to provide decent school buildings, properly qualified teachers, and adequate courses of study for all our children, and to expand our schooling to a point where every boy and girl in America could go through at least 2 years of high school, and half of them could go on to complete high school and have at least 2 years of college. Now this, as our studies indicate, is well within our national resources. And surely, there could be no finer investment in the American future.
Well, Mr. Coscadden, I'm sure that everyone listening to our program today subscribes particularly to that last thought of yours. Thank you, Mr. Thomas R. Coscadden, head of the Education Department of the 20th Century Fund, for those findings that indicate the potentialities of our American school system.
Living 1951 in conjunction with the 20th Century Fund has presented another in our special series, The People Act. If you wish to receive a copy of today's script or to ask questions pertaining to the possible application of the story of Haddon Township to your own community, you're invited to write to the 20th Century Fund, 330 West 42nd Street, New York 18. We repeat that address, the 20th Century Fund, 330 West 42nd Street, New York 18. The fund will be glad to send you a script or put you in touch with an agency that may help you in your situation. Join us again next week when our field reporter will introduce us to some people who put democracy to work in Carroll County, Georgia. The People Act is transcribed and produced for NBC and the 20th Century Fund by the Program Unit for Living 1951. Wade Arnold, executive producer, Edward King, director, Lou Hazem, writer, Elmore McKee, field reporter, Ben Grauer, narrator, and William Schwartau, recording engineer.